Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all you need. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You got
good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And this is Stephen Zimmer coming to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky for episode number 295. And joining me right on the cusp of the show to co-host tonight are two co-hosts, one from Parts Unknown, the one, the only, Daniel Dark. And right at game time, we have Holly Phillippe coming aboard from very close to me, as a matter of fact, about a room over. So good to see you, and apologize if my voice is just a little bit off tonight, folks. But both Holly and I came down with a cold this week and actually did not think Holly would make it for the show. But so we might sound a little, our voices may sound a little off, but hey, the show must go on, and want to have a great show for everybody. And welcome to all boring in the chat room. We have Scott Connolly, and he's listening with April as well, his wife. And then we have Carol Preflatter, Sandy Lender, and it looks like Amy McCorkle is also in the chat room. So, I'll turn over to at least give Holly a chance to say hi, and Daniel. So turn it over to you two for a sec.
Go ahead, Daniel.
He's there.
Oh. Yeah, I'm here.
There he is.
I am waiting for the proverbial axe to fall and everything so that I can know whether I need to get bags packed to head cross country or whether I'm going to be here for, you know, the days that I was looking at. But
the axe to fall sounds ominous.
It is. We're talking about Jack the Ripper. It's always ominous. You know. All righty. I was sorry about being so late coming on tonight and everything.
You're right on time.
Just on another Zoom and everything, learning, you know, how to actually be a good interviewee. You know. We get to interview other people, but how often do we get interviewed ourselves to know how to be a good interviewee? And that's what I was on tonight. And
cool.
Had to leave it real quick and get over here to this. So.
Yeah, there's an art to both sides.
It's different when you're in the hot seat.
Well, we'll have to – maybe we could do a test run and put you in as the interviewee guest on the Star Chamber show, and you can't do any hosting activity. You have to just simply be a guest and be interviewed. Well, maybe we could do a trial run.
That's right.
See how you do. Give you some practice on safe ground.
That'll be fun.
We can do that.
I have no trouble being asked to talk. You know, they don't hear me as much on here and everything as they do, you know, Stephen and stuff. But, you know, I try to keep the show running in a track, which I think it works good because Stephen doesn't run on the tracks.
Sometimes he gets derailed.
But that's the fun.
every now and then we need to get back on the track so we can move on to something else. So
that's sometimes true, yes, but you know,
I'm easily sidetracked. There's all kinds of ways a combo could go.
Yes, that's
true. She sounds exciting when
She was struggling. She got kind of like our bout of COVID. She always gets hit a little worse than me when we both catch the same whatever. And so, yeah, she's been pretty much laid up. I'm amazed she's on the show, actually. So.
Well, you know, we was talking about the subject matter we're talking about. I'm going to force myself. But, I may not make it the whole time. We'll see. But I'm not feeling the greatest, but it is what it is. My son Martin is responsible. He brought us all the funk.
It's his fault.
And then
directly.
I had grandkids here all weekend. We had grandkids, the oldest ones, until Tuesday. Yeah, yesterday. And
they had some family emergency trouble, had to stay. Yeah, they had some family stuff come up and had to stay an extra day.
Stuffed animal that has the greatest on it, so she can always feel the greatest.
I do.
That would work.
But see, I tell you, when I get a cold, I mean, it really hits me harder. Anything, damn COPD, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
So I always get sicker than the average Joe. But
yeah.
I'm hanging in, and I got to get better. I'm hitting echinacea and all that good stuff, all my unnatural stuff. So, got to get better because I got the little grandkids coming in this weekend. So, that's the crew that's fun.
No. Fun. Interesting definition of fun. Joy.
Steven, go grab her a bottle of tequila and everything and...
Yeah,
let her
we all need a bottle of tequila when they're around. My God,
that's
and, I'll need a barrel of bourbon to get through this weekend. But
and I'll put up a tree, right? Because I know our crazy cats. I know darn well that Vicky, you know, Queen Victoria, was going to tear a tree down. I just knew she would because she's crazy and she's feral. She's, you know, and I'm like, she'll tear it down. And so I haven't put a tree up in like 2 years. Well, the kids were coming, so I'm like, well, I'll put a stupid tree up, but I'm only going to throw lights on it. Well, this tree has three pieces. If we'd have put all three pieces, it would have been like, you know, 12 feet tall. And I'm like, no, because then my son Noah's like, she's just going to knock it over, and it's going to be in somebody's lap on the couch. So I'm like, true. So we only put two pieces together. So it's only about as tall as me. For safety measure, and I didn't put any ornaments, just some tinsel, which she's already half tore off, and every day I catch her, like, up in the tree, and this morning when I got up and we let them out of the bedroom, because they sleep in here with us, she was all, like, three-quarters up the tree, just meowing and meowing. I'm like, are you stuck? Meow, meow. And I was like, well, you just got to figure it out, you know, climbing up in there, but she finally did, but it was wiggling pretty good. I'm waiting for it to go over. Cats and Christmas trees don't mix.
No.
I thought that you would have learned that from, you know, Christmas holiday or whatever it was with Chevy Chase.
Well, you know, I've never had a cat as crazy as Queen Victoria is. And the rest of my cats, I've never had a girl cat. And I don't know if that's got something to do with it or not, but all my boys have been behaved and not tried to break down my tree. But she's just, you can't tell her nothing.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to do what she wants to do.
She's awesome. Well,
Christmas vacation and see what happened to the cat there and show that
to
Queen Victoria.
Yeah, let's avoid that. Yeah, we don't want
to
do that.
I need to show that to... Yeah, we need to watch that to show that to Queen Victoria so she sees it.
Yeah, we could show her the movie, but yeah, we don't want anything like that remotely happening to the cats. So, but
and poor Albert, Prince Albert just looks at her. Well, Prince Albert lays under the tree and just looks at her like, you're crazy. I don't know what you're doing, woman, but, you know, whatever. And he just lays there and stretches out, you know. He's
That's
a good
Albert.
Boy. He's in here with me now. There he goes.
Yeah. He's keeping Holly company
there.
Yeah,
like there. Amy says, it's her world. You're just living in it. That's true. Yeah. Victoria.
That's pretty much it.
The queen is in the house.
Well, we're going to get to a discussion of both writing and then also a reflection on the passing of the amazing and wonderful Anne Rice this weekend, and look at her legacy, because obviously one of the most influential authors of the modern era. So we're going to get into that discussion in just a moment, but we would be remiss if we did not recognize our awesome sponsors for tonight. And it's the combo, the high energy combo of Jumpmaster Press and Sandy Lender. So we got a couple of quick spots to play for you from both Sandy Lender, which, by the way, is focusing on a book you should be getting for your stocking stuffers and last minute Christmas shopping. Make sure you get some copies, because it's something you can use all 365 days next year. So it's a great book for 2022. And then, of course, Jumpmaster Press, the Jump Card ID and the Jump Card. And with live events kind of creeping back in, that is something you definitely want to look into for 2022. So first we're going to go play Sandy Spot, and then I will go to Jane and Kyle with Jumpmaster. But here's Sandy Lender.
Tell an artist in your life you support and believe in them. Author Sandy Lender makes that easy with her latest release, 365 Days to Create and Motivate Your Inner Writer. This workbook is a journal, creative resource, and tool of inspiration all rolled up in one, with 365 prompts and suggestions to stoke the creative brain. Grab it from Amazon in time for holiday gift giving. That's 365 Days to Create and Motivate Your Inner Writer by Sandy Lender.
All right. Thank you, Sandy. Somewhere Simon LeBon is cheering about that ad. I just know it, Sandy. And so coming over here to Jumpmaster Press, and this is a little bit from them. And, of course, the voice on this is the amazing Gene Rowley. All right, here we go.
Do you love to read? Do you love sci-fi and fantasy and horror and mystery and maybe even romance? Then Jumpmaster Press has something for you. Jumpmaster Press would like to give you a 10% discount on our entire catalog. Just go to jumpmasterpress.com and use code IMAGINE2021 at checkout to save 10% on anything in our vast catalog. That's jumpmasterpress.com and IMAGINE2021 at checkout. Jumpmaster Press, a proud sponsor of the Star Chamber Podcast and Imaginarium 2021.
Thank you, Gene, and thank you, Kyle, from Jumpmaster Press. Thank you, Sandy. So we're now to get into the rest of the show. We're definitely – while Holly is with us, just in case she doesn't last the whole show, I think it's most important that we discuss Anne Rice a bit, but we can fold in a little bit of our discussion into secondary characters, not protagonists, antagonists, but those characters that are just so vital to any kind of story, whether novel, video game, movie, to fleshing out a movie, making it compelling. And yeah, we got several writers in the chat room right now who are great with writing secondary characters. Yes, Kyle. Not Kyle. Clayton. Clayton.
Who the
yes.
Hell, Kyle?
I'm sorry, Clayton. I'm sorry, Clayton. I
Kyle.
Have my brain is not fully intact tonight, because I'm under the, like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm under the weather a bit. But Clayton, yes, yes, that means you too. With, of course, Obligations of Rank has a great secondary character named Skylar Zim, who is inspired as the I'm the ancestor of this character, evidently, in his latest novel. So, but yes, that secondary characters like that, and Officer Gloria Wheeler from Carol Preflatish's Nathan Perry mysteries, lots of great secondary characters. Sandy Lender has his novels are chock full of them. Amy McCorkle, the same. But yes, those characters that flesh out a book and make a big difference in plots and the way a book breathes and a plot develops. And I mean, just absolutely vital. Secondary characters are so important. And so we probably will fold a little bit of that and get Holly's take on that as she discusses Anne Rice's character, because there are a slew of great secondary characters that I know Holly loves throughout. But yeah, as most of you heard, unfortunately, Anne Rice passed this past weekend on Saturday, and Christopher Rice, her son, posted online, and that was really extra hard on Holly because that's her favorite author. And I have a story to share before, you know, before Holly, you know, let Holly talk a little bit, but I had a personal story with Ann Rice and Christopher many years back when Ann and Chris were here touring. They were at Joseph Beth Booksellers, and if those of you, you know, are familiar with Lexington, know it's one of the top 10 independent bookstores in the country. I mean, it is a beautiful bookstore with a big dome atrium. It's two levels, got a bistro, just all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, it is an incredible you know, bookstore and very large capacity. So like when they have, you know, an author like Ann Rice, you know, we're talking easily, you know, get 1,000 people, 1,500 people. I mean, that's not uncommon with some of the bigger authors. And so anyway, they were there, and I believe it was the Wolf Gift Chronicles, the werewolf ones, the books that Ann was doing at the time. And it was one of the books in that series was what she was touring for. And they had a very strict thing going on where they did not do personalizations because of the size of the crowd. They were only signing the books with, you know, you got to go up and, you know, if you had a ticket, you know, but she'd just sign your name, her name in it, but they would not be personalized or no personal messages or inscriptions, things like that. Very strict. And so my sister, for her birthday, I surprised her because Ann Rice is also her favorite author. And I got her these Wolf Gift Chronicles books, and I got tickets for the signing. She didn't even know that Ann Rice is in town that night, so I surprised her with that, and of course she was blown away. And then we went to Joseph Beth, and when we got near the front, you know, we did manage to kind of get through to Brooke at Brooke Raby. Some of you may know her. She's awesome. She's had like author events and things at Joseph Beth at the time, but that this was my sister's birthday, and we were just talking about it, and Ann and Chris kind of overheard that while we were up near the front. And so when Courtney got to go meet Ann and Chris, and I was with her, they totally just broke the rules. They gave her personal inscriptions, wished her a happy birthday, and just took a, you know, minute to talk to her. Both of them did. I mean, they're just so kind, so cool, and just kind of really blew me away, you know, in the midst of that massive event, that they would you know, kind of break the rules and do something like that to make Courtney's day and her birthday. So I will not ever forget that, and I was thinking about that this weekend, just how kind Ann and Chris were in Lexington. And so, you know, that was my connection. But for Holly, it was a lot harder because she'd been a fan. And I'll turn it over to Holly to talk a little bit about Ann, because obviously, I mean, we lost one of the most influential authors of the modern era, no question. So, yeah, Holly, you want to say a few things?
I took it, I guess, more personal. I don't know. She was one. I not only idolized her, she's been such a part of my life for so long. And when you have, and I'm sure all of you have an author, I know you do because you're writers, you look up to, or at least characters that you draw from. And they're just like family to you. You know, they're a part of your life. Her last three books sit on my nightstand. I sleep by them every single night. Stephen Kvouch, signed copies. This is what is on my nightstand, is my Lestat books. Lestat, as most of you know, if you know me, is my beloved. I always say I'm waiting for Lestat to come give me the kiss of death. You know, I adore Lestat. And Anne was Lestat. You know, she was the voice of him. And I don't know if Christopher will flesh out more or not, but they were working on the show. That's why Christopher Rice hasn't been available for the past few years to come to Imaginarium. I've been talking to him about coming to Imaginarium, but he's been working with Ann, developing and getting the TV show ready, which hopefully will be in production next year. Finally, I believe it's coming to AMC, I want to say. But they're also, I just seen they got the clearance to do a series on her, the Witches of Mayfair, which, if you read the Vampire Chronicles in order, the Witches of Mayfair tie-in and are involved in the lineage of the Vampire Chronicles. You could go to Anne's website, and she explained how to read the books in the correct order of, like, the story. So if you've never read any of them, or if you've just read a few, but you'd like to read, like, you know, the chronological story in order, there's a list that tells you how to do that. And years ago, I went and done that. I read them exactly how she wanted them to be read. And I did it in 1 year. I just went through and read them all. And, yeah, just phenomenal. And I will probably go back and reread them all again one day, I'm sure. But, yeah, she meant a lot to me. And I always wanted to meet her. I never got to meet her in person. Stephen, you know, was aware of that. I just absolutely adored Anne. I was one of her, what they call, people on the page, you know, that followed her, and you know, make comments about her stuff and, you know, all that. She always dedicated her books to her fans and people of the page, and she did appreciate. She was humble. You know, she did appreciate her fans. She knew that was her life strength, you know, and she respected that. And Stephen woke me up. Well, I woke up there morning. He came in here and he said, before you get on Facebook or anything, I have something bad to tell you. And I was like, oh God. And he's like, somebody's passed. And I mean, I'm like, well, who, you know? And then he told me and I just started crying. And yeah, I mean, I mean, it was just unbelievable, but she had had a stroke, throughout the night, and it was complications from that stroke. So she was taken suddenly from us, and her husband Stan died back in 2002 on December 9th, and she passed on December 11th. So it was only a couple of days after her husband had passed years ago. Christopher had mentioned they passed very close to, you know, to the same date. And I hate that, because Christopher's the only child living, and now he's got to go through the holidays every year with these dates coming up, and it's just heartbreaking, because he is such a nice young man, and if you all haven't read anything of Christopher's, please do. He's a phenomenal writer, too, in his own right, and he has a podcast, which is also very cool. But, yeah, I took it hard. And I mean, she was so influential, and she influenced a different way of writing and a different way of bringing new life to older characters that were already beloved to us. The vampires, the werewolves, the, you know, Frankenstein. Now, she didn't write about Frankenstein, but you know what I'm saying. There's all these iconic monsters, if you will, from history and supernatural you know, entities that they've used over and over and over. But she brought new life to them. She gave them, you know, a new background, a fresh feeling, and showed writers, you know, you could do that. You could take these old endearing monsters and figures, but give them your own spin, and that's okay. Just like Stephanie Meyer did with the whole Sparkling, which everybody's made fun of, but I still like Stephanie's books. I still like Twilight too, but it's just a different take, and that's okay. You don't have to stick to, you know, the same old rules and, you know, lore, so to speak. You can create your own, a new lore, you know, and give it new breath. So that's what I was wanting to discuss, because I know, like, Daniel's book, well, Knives Tale, Victims Tale, it's all told not from, you know, the brain of Jack, per se, but it's told from the view of the knife. It's told, and we didn't know exactly who Jack was, so he breathes new life into Jack, you know, and it gave him his own version of Jack's background. And then the victim's tale gives the victim's view, which we don't know for 100% positive what the victim's view was. But Daniel gave that life, you know. Daniel, you want to elaborate on that?
Me personally, I take stories that everybody basically knows, you know, certain parts of it, and I change a story to be something a little bit different, or like with Jack the Ripper, I had read, you know, I don't know how many books on the ConocoPhive cases, you know, that, and the different suspects and stuff like that. But what it came down to actually, you know, knowing what would have caused a man, what type of man would have become Jack the Ripper, I never saw anything on that, so I decided to write it. You know, Anne Rice made vampires cool again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what she did. She took a story that, you know, we all know the basics of and elaborated on the reality of it. On, you know, what would be going through a vampire's mind and how would they actually live and different things like that, that, you know, we as authors, sometimes we have to sit there and think about, you know, this is the way I perceive that this, you know, this character would live. And she drew it out, you know, fabulously. I'm just learning today that, you know, Anne Rice actually died. I did not know that. I hadn't seen it come up in any news feeds and everything. And my wife had actually asked me about that because of the way that, you know, the show was, you know, put up. And I was like, I don't think so. You know, they're probably just, you know, doing a thing on her because I knew that, you know, you were so in love with her works that we were just, you know, concentrating on a particular author that we could all learn from that has, you know, great works out there that aren't just the, you know, cookie cutter example of, you know, a vampire or, you know, anything. Right. And, you know, she, mm-hmm. you know, she was like the Tolkien of our generation.
It's true.
That's so true. And what, you know, what I wasn't thinking about until you were talking just a minute ago was, you know, do I need to have a child by the name of Chris to take over my legacy once I die? Because Christopher Tolkien, now there's Christopher Rice, and then
that is true. That is true.
Just like, there is something there, yeah.
You know, if you're going to be a great writer, do you need to have a son by the name of Christopher? You know?
Christopher. It helps.
Right.
And,
yeah,
and
then,
her use.
And then there was Christopher Robin.
There was Christopher Robin.
Yeah, there's that too.
But her use of secondary characters, like Steve was talking about, was just fascinating because still within the Vampire Chronicles, she had individual books that not only had Lestat, you know, in there, Lestat is tied to all, but, you know, she had one named like Pandora, which is my vampiric name. For those of you who didn't know, that's Pandora. I love Pandora. But that was a book of hers, and that featured the vampire Pandora. And then she had, you know, like Ramses the Dead. She had, Armand. and then Akasha, which was the queen of the dam. You know, she had all these side characters, secondary characters that were just phenomenal, that she wrote, you know, individual books that, you know, to them, dedicated to them, making them like first character, but yet they were the secondary characters, but they got their own individual books, but it still tied into the series.
How many other secondary characters, you know, would she have written if she had had time?
Right.
We don't know.
No.
You know, because you talk about Queen of the Damned.
Mm-hmm.
It became movies. You know, that series became movies also, along with, you know, Interview with the Vampire became a movie. And, you know, and we're not talking about a cheap, you know, movie or a self-published movie. We're talking about, you know, blockbuster hits.
Right.
That, you know.
Right.
And it's hard to get, you know, that type of notoriety. And I can't imagine what all she, you know, had to do besides sell as many books as she did. But, you know, you take her, Stephen King, you know, some of these that almost everything that they write, they put into a movie. Because
they never know how to bring
a story to life.
That's it. And Anne was always very particular and didn't want it, because she seen Queen of the Damned. I love Stuart Townsend. I mean, he played Lestat, and he'll always be my Lestat. And we all get in arguments over this on her page about who their favorite Lestat is. So people like Tom Cruise, which was Interview with the Vampire, but Tom Cruise was not Lestat. He did not bring Lestat justice at all. Stuart Townsend did. I mean, he just oozed it. You could tell he read the books. He really studied Lestat, and he really spoke with Anne about it, you know, in depth. But the only thing they do in Queen of the Damned, they try to take the vampire Lestat, Queen of the Damned, you know, and mashed them all in one movie.
Right.
There was a lot of things changed, you know, and it is irritating, but you know, it still was a beautiful movie. If people hadn't read the books, the movie was just great, you know, and it's still great. I mean, I watch it all the time. Stephen knows I go back and watch them. I watch them all the time.
Oh, yes, I can vouch.
They did mismatch. And Anne didn't want that to happen again. Like, I would love to see Armand made into a movie. That would just be fascinating. And I think it was Antonio Banderas. That's who played Armand. I mean, that would make a good one. They could have done one on Pandora, you know, just on down the line. And keep the legacy going, which they may. They actually may. Oh yeah, we got a lot of Armand fans apparently in the chat room. Yes, Antonio Banderas is smoldering. Sandy says yes, indeed. An interview with the vampire Antonio with his long fingernails and that beautiful long hair. Yeah, it was wonderful. But the lady that played Akasha in Queen of the Damned, you know, she passed away years ago.
Yeah, not long after that.
Elia.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, 2001 she passed away.
You know, I've forgotten what part, what the actual part that he played.
Who?
Danny Cato. That he always plays that demonic type of, you know, whether he's an actual person or whether he's, you know, in something like that, he's got that look that he brings that that type of character to life.
Right.
And, you know, there, when you put a cast together and you've got a great cast, but then you sit there and you give them, like you're talking about, a mashup of the story instead of making it a couple of different movies or three different movies or something like that, they made it into one movie. No one really gets to shine at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. True. You know, Andy said, what was the name of the actor you're talking about again?
Danny Trejo.
Oh, yeah, Danny Trejo.
Well, I know he's in the From Dusk Till Dawn movie, so I know some of those vampire movies. I didn't know he was in one of the Anne Rice ones, so I'll have to look into that. But yeah,
I was trying to figure out who he played.
I think he was in Queen of the Damned.
I'm looking. I'm going to try to see if I can find that information.
I may be wrong. I may be getting it mixed up, but I think that he is in Queen of the Damned.
I'm trying to look this up.
I'm looking up his
filmography. I can't remember if he was.
We're looking at about 2001. Let's see. Yeah, he's from Dusk Till Dawn 1, 2, and 3. And I'm looking here on his filmography. I don't see Queen of the Damned, though. Yeah, but he was. I do know where you're getting that from. Yeah, he played in the popular From Dusk Till Dawn series as a vampire. So
yeah,
he might have shadowed over with that one.
I'm mixing up the two movies then.
Yeah.
So.
But you're not wrong. No, he plays a great secondary character.
Yeah, he did play
From
a
Dusk Till Dawn
movie.
Yeah, and they do. A secondary character adds flavor and adds some dimension around the protagonists or antagonists, and I mean they really help bring a movie to life. And yeah, and Danny Trejo definitely did that in his character in the From Dusk Till Dawn series. So that's a good example, actually.
Not
a
sure.
Secondary character, a very good example.
Even Louis, mm-hmm. who was played by Brad Pitt in Interview with the Vampire. Louis was a great secondary character to Lestat. You know, Lestat absolutely adored Louis. He created Louis. You know, Louis was his companion all those years. But Louis never lost his humanity. He never wanted to give up his humanity card.
I'll tell you a personal thing. At first, I had not read. When I watched the movie, I had not read the book. So I thought she was interviewing Louis about half the movie until I realized that she wasn't. But for about half the movie, I thought that she was interviewing Louis.
Well, that was Louis. It was Louis, but then – at the very end of that movie, it implies, it don't ever show it, but you know it's Lestat that actually comes in and sits in that car, you know, and it's just like, now do you want the real story, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's always like, Louis's always babbling on and on and on. You know, Lestat was always like, he's always babbling on and on and on. It's so funny. Because Louis always kept his humanity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Brad Pitt did a phenomenal job playing him. Yeah,
what was your original reaction to the casting, Holly? Because I know that's a big point of contention for fans of the Tom Cruise film. What was your first reaction and to the casting announcements? Then how did you feel about it after seeing that movie?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I absolutely thought this is going to be a train wreck. He cannot be Lestat. He doesn't have that air about him to be Lestat, nor did he have the look. Lestat was angelic beauty. He is angelic beauty. And I just think – now, Brad Pitt, I actually like him as Louis. Sandy don't like it, but I actually enjoyed young Brad as Louis, but yeah, Lestat, And after I watched the movie, yeah, I was like, Tom Cruise tried. Yeah, Tom Cruise is a phenomenal actor or whatever. It just wasn't his part, you know? He just did not fit the character. He didn't bring Lestat glory or to the, you know, to the screen like he should have been. Lestat has this air about him that's almost, how could you put it? Well, it's otherworldly, you know, almost to where he draws you in. He's a vampire with such great beauty that everybody around him is just mesmerized by the way he moves, by the way he acts, you know, just the air about him that he commands of a room when he walks in. And Tom Cruise did not bring that at all. Yeah, I didn't like it on the screen. I still don't like it. I love watching the movie because I love the movie. But Tom Cruise, no. Nope. I knew it was going to be a train wreck, and it was.
But none of them got anything on Nandor from What We Do in the Shadows, though. None of them do, right, Holly?
God, I love it. Oh, Remillion's asking me, my ideal pick for Lestat. My ideal pick, actually, and I know people aren't going to like it, is Stuart Townsend. I'm sorry. Stuart got it right. The way he moves his body, you watch his body language, his voice. Stuart don't have the blonde hair. He's got dark hair. But the way he brought
though.
Him to life.
Yeah, but
I
that
mean,
can be fixed
yeah.
easy.
Oh, easy. Yeah, I mean, that'd be simple. But Stuart is also very hard to work with from what I hear, which breaks my heart because when I think of Lestat, that's who I see now.
Yep. Almost Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. I don't know if a lot of you knew that. He did not get along with Peter Jackson, and they brought Viggo Mortensen down 3 days before Lord of the Rings began filming because of the conflict with Stuart. He was originally Aragorn. So that just as an anecdote to Holly's story there.
And if I had to pick a newer version, because Brad Pitt's, you know, a little older now. He looks different. I did like him as Louis first. But if I had to pick somebody, if I'd have got my pick for Louis, it would have been Stephen Arnott, who I'm going to say. It would have been Tom Hiddleston. But yeah, it would have been Loki, without a doubt.
Well, it's like,
right, Steve?
I don't know whether you've seen the pick for the new Addams Family, but I'm not real happy about that one.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Remillion was just typing Hiddleston.
Yeah. Yeah, that made the chat room very happy that she brought that up, I think. But on the topic of secondary characters, and I'm going to put one of our authors in the chat room in the hot seat because I just got done working on the editing side of her book, Witch Hunt, third book, Nathan Perry Mysteries. But she's got a character in Nathan Perry Mysteries, Gloria Wheeler, who I've liked since the first book. And it's so interesting how she's brought this character along, a very strong and with ambition female character that's in this small-town police department where the chief is more, you know, is kind of hard on females as far as, you know, not seeing them in the same roles as men and not promoting them and that kind of thing. And she's kind of had to work in that kind of climate. And Nathan definitely comes in and helps matters in the right direction in the series. You have to read about it, of course. Not going to give any spoilers. But Gloria Wheeler character, I think, is just awesome. And the arc grows, and she's a secondary character, but she had so much flavor to the stories and comes in at the right moments and scenes to really, you know, add something to them, livens them up, is not an expendable character. It's really a character that, you know, is really, really compelling to the point that I actually think Carol could make a whole spinoff series on Gloria Wheeler. I think she could actually do a Gloria Wheeler mystery series. But now when you're talking about Anne Rice, which characters, Holly, and Daniel can also chime in on this and comment, which characters do you see in the Anne Rice books that could become the stars. I mean, like, you could pull them out and absolutely have them be the protagonist, like on a level, like maybe with Lestat even, you know, like that kind of centerpiece character. Which of her secondary characters do you find compelling enough that could carry a story in that role?
The one that I see is, and I can't remember the name, but the one that Kristen Dunst played, the little girl.
Ollie, you know.
I'm sick. Christ almighty. That's what I look her up.
Claudia, are you thinking Claudia character?
Claudia,
right.
Yeah, that's it. Claudia, okay. God Almighty.
Yes.
Claudia could happily be a whole side.
Getting older and everything, and learning how to be a vampire. I think that would have been a great, storyline.
She watched her whole village being wiped out by the Black Death. She laid, you know, she still take care of her dead mother, you know, trying to get her to come back. And when they found her, you know, and Louis turned her, but regretted it afterward because she was always stuck as a child. And as she aged and grew, yeah, she'd have been a phenomenal side character on her own to tell her story, because, you know, as she grew into a woman per se, coming into her own, but she could never not be a child. I mean, she was always going to have the body of a child. She was always going to be perceived as a child. And, you know, Lestat would want to buy her more and more dolls and more dolls. She didn't want dolls anymore. She was a grown woman, but he still wanted to treat her as a child. And it was very heartbreaking. And all she wanted was a mother, you know, and a companion, you know, someone that, you know.
And she, you know,
treat her
if you
as
looked
she
at
was.
Who she killed, you know, it was always women.
Yes. Yes, because, you know, she didn't have that mother in her life. She had the two father figures, and she always craved for a mother, since hers was taken away from her so young, you know. She could have easily be a standalone movie. Oh, without question.
And learning the fact that, you know, wanting a mother, even though she might have been technically older than the person that she turned, having that mother figure, even though that she was more experienced and more everything in life, that would have been a fabulous, you know, storyline behind that.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And then another one would have been Marius.
I was just about to ask you about him. That's the one I'm drawn to. Good call, Holly.
Marius.
Which one was
Marius? To what?
Which one was Marius now?
Marius
I've got to go
actually...
back to the book again.
He's in Queen of the Damned,
Maria,
if you're thinking movies. He is in Queen of the Damned, played by Vincent Perez, plays in Queen of the Damned.
Okay.
He was Lestat's maker. Marius goes way back. I mean, he's very old. He was one of the originals. He's the one that actually took care of the... Queen and King of the Damned. So, you know, he took care of Akasha and her consort. And his story going all the way back to the beginning would have just been phenomenal.
Yeah, you just brought up something that I never did watch it, but you being a Vampire Chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, Holly
about
is a Vampire Chronicle.
She is.
I am actually. Yeah.
What did you ever watch the originals?
Of course I did. The series?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched The Vampire Diaries, and then the originals was a spinoff from that because they were the original vampires. And then, what's the series? Legacies. I watched Legacies now. That's the newer one, a spinoff from the originals, because the Salvatore School for the Supernatural is what it's about. It's about the kids.
Yeah.
Of like the characters from the originals and the original, yeah.
Yeah, I was watching the Vampire Diaries and stuff, you know, when it first came out, and mm-hmm. then my TV got changed and it didn't carry it anymore. So, you know, I didn't get to see all the Vampire Diaries or the originals, and now my TV picks up the, you know, the new shows, but I'm lost in them because I don't know, you know, any of the characters.
Right. That was phenomenal. The original was just phenomenal. Just crazy. Oh.
We have a question, trivia question. Sandy Lender asked, wasn't Marius an original sire? Do you want to tackle that, Holly, real quick? We have a trivia question being thrown at you. Was he original sire, or was he sired?
He was by Akasha. Yes, he was.
He goes way back, yeah.
He was over 2,000 years old. I was going back to his early life.
God, he's older than me. He's even older than me.
He was born in 30 B.C. as a human in the Roman Galicilli city of Massalia. I guess I'm saying that right. He was the illegitimate child of a Celtic woman in the land of Gaul and a wealthy Roman. Yeah, I have to go back to actually look. Yeah, he's called the true child of the millennia because the same as he is bisexual, having both female-male lovers, because just like Armand, Abacus, Pandora, Akasha, Zenobia, Bianca did. But, yeah, he's one of the original ones.
Who did he sire?
Lestat.
You know? Besides Lestat.
Yeah.
It
could go on and on. I mean, we just don't know. That's the thing. Who all did he create? You know, that would have been phenomenal to know, you know, if he'd have got his own book, if he'd have got his own movie, you know. That's what I said. He would have been phenomenal to know more about and to go back more into his human life prior to him being sired by Akasha. I mean, it would have just been phenomenal, you know, to see that.
But do you hear in Holly's comments about, do you hear in Holly's comments, though, about how well Anne Rice brought this Marius character to life as a secondary character? That's what we're talking about. When you're an author, you know, you put so much effort on protagonists, antagonists, and the like, and all. But, you know, what are those characters that really can bring something to a scene, to a subplot, to a plot, who can really make pivotal, you know, and they're not throwaway characters at all. They're integral to a series. That's one. And you can hear it in how Holly's talking about Marius. It's somebody that could be the star of their own book. It's somebody that, you know, you breathe life into that really, you know, becomes a fan favorite even. And, you know, let's look at Lord of the Rings series, Tom Bombadil. There's a secondary character that became a fan favorite of the readers. You know, didn't make, you know, like I said, the trilogy films. But still, you know, that's what we're talking about here. It's You know, it's a secondary character has all those, has dimension. You know, it's not a, you know, a throwaway. You know, and that's, and I think that I just want to dive in from a writing standpoint and point that out. But
well,
yeah, Marius is a great example.
You asked me earlier, Stephen, about, you know, Knife's Tale and stuff. It's like Hardwick in my book.
Mm-hmm.
He's a secondary character that is set up to write another book about him. So, you know, that is the way I did that, as a secondary character. You know, where he, you know, gave information about where he came from and stuff like that to a certain point, but how him and Jack being together, how that affected his life and, you know, put him on different things. And it stems back from a real person,
mm-hmm.
time period.
Right, right. You just told his story, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Definitely could be a book on his own, right? You know, have his own book.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. And then the other two.
Reepicheep from the Chronicles of Narnia. One of my favorite secondary characters of all time. One of my favorite and most inspirational. One of the reasons I'm a writer today is C.S. Lewis. So, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I love those characters that, you know, yeah, they could be stars themselves. Yeah, Reepicheep from Chronicles of Narnia, another one.
What I tell you who else I would love to see them eventually make it to a movie is her characters Mariette and her sister, twin sister, Makar. They were original sires. They're twin sisters. They're powerful witches that lived in a valley. Like, they're like 6,000 years old. Right? They're way back. They were from a very old line of witches. But I would love to see their story, because as it is right now, if y'all haven't read any of the last three Lestat books she did, Anne swore after the Vampire Chronicles she was done. She gave us Lestat to be out into the world for him to enjoy us and us to enjoy him. She wasn't going to write anymore. And then everybody kept begging and begging and begging. So she wrote the last three Lestat books. But as of right now,
so
like, you know, they, huh?
Frank L. Baum, you know, he did the same thing. He's written the story,
right,
and he's quit. And the kids would not leave him alone until he wrote, you know, all these different books about Oz.
Mm-hmm.
That's showing that you're connecting with your audience.
Right.
The audience of, you know, Anne Rice, those that, like yourself, that love a good vampire story, is not going to let it die, you know, with just one character. They want to see,
right,
you know, what else you have in that realm of all these different characters that you brought to life. What are you going to show us next? And, you know, the public wins a lot of times in that fight.
Right.
You know, we got some good comments in the chat room.
I know Stephen, you know, has his books and everything that, you know, he writes that are standalone, but they, you know, a lot of them are secondary characters. That he's written about.
Yeah, the novellas have a lot of good, strong secondary characters. Yeah, and they are very important to all those standalones.
You know, like,
yeah,
you could
pay a lot of attention to those.
Had like, you know, like what they did with Xena, the warrior princess, you know, where it was all just about Xena, basically.
Mm-hmm.
you know, she had her secondary characters that ran with her and did all this stuff, you know, Gabriel and all that. But, you know, with that, what are you cheating your fan base out of? I'll let Steven talk about that.
Oh, and I was responding to somebody in the chat room. What's the read the question to me one more time there, Daniel. I was about to respond to the chat room on something.
Like with, you've got a lot of secondary characters that you have written novellas about and other books about and stuff like that. But like in Xena, the Princess Warrior, where it's all about Xena, basically, she had Gabriel and had, all those other characters ran with her and everything. But you never really saw their story. They made it all about Xena. You know, how do you feel like that you would be contributing to your fan base by just staying with the one character?
Well, I mean, like with my ensembles and stuff, I larger series like that are ensemble based, I definitely cycle those characters back in so they don't like vanish forever. I mean, so that's I think that always keeps the fan base happy when, you know, they're not gone for good, because I had a character in Heart of a Lion that was really well liked, and Raiden separates from him in a port during an escape when she rescues this kid from being sacrificed to this real diabolical god. And but everybody just like, oh no, you know, you dropped this character. No, I didn't. Comes back in the third book, as a matter of fact, and plays a nice role in the third book. And so, I mean, I think the important thing is to, you know, keep them in mind and cycle them back in, and you know, and they can fulfill some very important roles. And I think, you know, and then, you know, I was looking at the chat room here. We had some comments rolling in. I want to get, they're kind of along the same lines, but like Sandy has written some novellas with characters from her Choices series, secondary characters, and expanded them into their own novellas as well. And looks like, Clayton, he had just a brief bit on his character Livia's parents in his new novel, Obligations of Rank, and he's 28,000 words into telling their specific story right now. So, yeah, sometimes you actually will take those characters and run with them on their own, too. And but if you're doing a series or something like that, yeah, cycle them back in. Let them come back and reappear, and be a part of the action again. And I think that keeps the fans happy. And you know, and that from that kind of disappointment of having to have a character they love just completely vanish.
And then I want to answer something that Rhea was actually asking something, and I did actually know the. What she was asking, if I actually knew that Lestat was not originally Lestat, it would have been Lestan. Dan Rice was Anne's husband, so she wanted to write a character, you know, that had Stan in it, so it's Lestan. Now, saying that, she misspelled it Lestat, which is supposed to be said with a French flair, because his name is Lestat de Liancourt, you know. But in her last couple books, Steve, I pointed this out to you when I was reading them. There's been a couple times she spelled Lestat's name wrong and actually wrote Lestan. And I've caught it.
Yeah, you showed those to me. Yeah, in the books. Yeah. That's
and
cool.
I'm like, Steve, look. It's an edit. It's a, you know, it's, I said, she wrote it wrong. But yeah, I love finding that, you know, little things like that. But she probably actually had her stand on her mind, you know, when she wrote it. She was writing
and
with that and was thinking of Stan.
And she may have left them in there on purpose, just as a commemorative to him.
Well, that's true too.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, like Rhea said, it was a Creole name that she had misspelled, Dan, and she put Lestat. And it, you know, it in French, it's supposed to be like dot. We say Lestat, you know, but we say Lestat here, but Lestat, you know, if you're saying it French. But yeah, fascinating.
Well, it should be natural for you with your French heritage there, Holly. that should be right along the line for you for sure. But
That's true.
Is cool. That is awesome. And she did come out in an interview that she admitted to goofing on it. So mm-hmm. That is from Renmillion, who I want to say yes. Thank you for listening tonight, Renmillion. She is definitely one of our regular sponsors in the show. Awesome. I mean, the true Renaissance woman. If you ever looked up like Renaissance woman in the dictionary, you'd have her picture. But yeah, that's from her. Yeah, she confirms it. Yeah, actually did goof on it. Yeah, because Holly has pulled out the hardcovers and shown me where that has happened, and I always get a good chuckle. Just from being an editor, how things sometimes sneak past you, no matter what. You can be the best editor in the world, and the gremlins will sneak by once in a while. But
and like you said, funny. She may very well, you know, like you were saying, she may very well left it as a, you know, a memory, and that's true. She may have.
I've got a question for Holly.
Uh oh.
If Brad Pitt doing a signing and everything at a show as Lestat, would you go and see
as
him?
As Louis.
Would you go see him?
Brad Pitt?
Yeah, or what's his name?
Oh, yeah, Tom Cruise. If Tom Cruise was doing a signing as Lestat?
Yeah.
If nobody else was with him and he was just solo, no. No. No, because I just think he did a horrible job. I really do. I just had no respect for him for filling that role at all. I mean, he just missed the mark, pure and simple. Now, if Brad Pitt was going as like Louis and they were doing some signings and everything, heck yeah, I'd go. You know, if Tom Cruise was there doing a signing along with, you know, Brad Pitt and a few others that, you know, had played characters, yeah, I would go. But yeah, it was not the role for him. Top Gun, good role for him. Was that? No.
Well, you know, the other one that he did, Eyes Wide Shut, it was a good role.
That's
a good movie.
One of my favorites of all time. We'll do a whole show on that sometime. Yes, that's one I've watched 100 times and studied thoroughly. So, yeah, great, great performance, I might say. But, yeah, Kubrick's final film. And, yeah, there's a reason for that. But, yeah, we'll get into that in a whole other story.
You just like the Nicole Kidman scene.
Pretty good, yeah. I ain't gonna lie.
No. It is something, though. It is a... That is an incredible film, but I agree with you. Yeah, he did a fantastic job in that one. Yeah, he's a very skilled actor. I mean, he didn't just make it because of good looks. I mean, he really has a lot of dimension and has shown him quite a range of performance across the years. Definitely, you know, I definitely have a lot of respect for him.
Well, it's just like the Leonardo DiCaprio that when he played give me the name of the movie where he's the tycoon.
Great Gatsby.
The
reboot, remake of the Great Gatsby, the Robert Redford version, the latest version.
Yes, that was a, you know, phenomenal movie in a way to me. Other people may have watched it and said, oh, that one's okay, that one sucks, or whatever. But, you know, I enjoyed that movie tremendously.
Yeah, Holly's a fan of that one, too. Holly likes that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's, you know, when I was talking about, like, the Addams Family earlier, you know, the new cast for that and everything. I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm not a real big fan of the cast. I may be after I see the movie, because I'm going to watch it, because of the Addams Family.
Well, yeah, I have to watch it regardless.
But, you know, who they've got playing Wednesday and different things like that, you know, just, I was like, why? And I know the answer to one of those questions on the person that he chose, because he's married to her.
Right.
But yeah, just sometimes when we look at characters and everything on our books and different things like that, and then we see who they pick for different characters. You know, like the Loki character that you were talking about earlier.
Right.
I don't think they could have found anybody any better for that part.
No, absolutely not.
You know, because he's got that mischief type of look about him anyway.
Yes, he does.
Like the movie that I was watching the other day with Day-Lewis, and, you know, playing Bill the Butcher. And they said that he became, even before the movie started shooting, he became that character. And it took him about 2 months to get out of the accent and everything, because he used it 24 hours a day during the whole shoot and even before the shoot started. And
right.
that's the type of actors that you really, you know, can believe in the character.
Mm-hmm.
Is when they go that far on it.
Yep. That's doing some great casting. You know, that's why Anne wanted to be such a part of, and that's what's taken so long, because she lost some of her pull with Interview and Queen of the Damned, and she didn't want to do that again. That's why she didn't do the big screen Hollywood thing again. She wanted to go television show so she could, you know, keep a hold of some of that control. And that's what's taken them some time. Yeah, she mm-hmm. wanted to keep her creative vision. And authors lose that. And people get mad. They see these movies. They don't realize, readers don't realize, the authors have lost creative control over most of that. They lose it you know. And Hollywood takes it over, production and mm-hmm. directors, and, you know, and they make it their mm-hmm. vision and not necessarily the
author's.
Yeah,
it's not the author's fault. Mm-mm.
Well, like, so, you know, Neil Gaiman with the Sandman and everything, he was not going to let them just do whatever they want to with that character.
Right.
You know, he's already, you know, that's one of the reasons that it's been how many years and they still haven't gotten the movie made yet.
Exactly.
And it's fallen through I don't know how many different times.
Mm-hmm. Correct. That is correct. And casting, like I said, is so important to your fans.
Uh-huh.
You know, and when you've got
a
series like The Vampire Chronicles, uh-huh. you're talking about a lot of us. There is a lot of us. And, you know, we want to see it done correctly and more, you know, to the book than what was done in the first two movies, you know.
Well, I think it's one of the problems with the Conan movie that Jason Momoa is in. A lot of the Robert E. Howard fans, you know, I mean, he just looks so different from the way the book describes Conan and all the Robert E. Howard stories that they weren't willing to, I think, give him a fair chance. And I, knowing the mediums are different, I looked at his performance, and his performance did fit the Conan of the book, so I thought he was great. But the movie had such a you know, I think a lukewarm reception in the public because, you know, he didn't, you know, and Arnold frankly didn't fit, you know, the books exactly, or the short stories and whatnot from Robert E. Howard. But I think that you're going uphill if you cast it in a way that the fans, you know, are not happy with. And I think that, you put your project on uphill.
Arnold fit more of the cover art for the original books.
Yes. Arnold had the size and posing physicality, I think, to fit the book art, or the short story art, I should say, like Frank Frazetta artwork and whatnot. But yeah, Momoa, I thought he gave a killer performance, but yeah, he didn't even, he came out already behind the eight ball because, you know, he was, you know, very different from what, you know, fans were expecting to be cast.
Well, it's just like, you know, Ron Perlman, you know, when he played, I had it in my head just a second ago, Hellboy.
Oh boy, yeah.
He fit that character, you know, when it came from the comic books, he looked like the Hellboy.
Right.
But, and they're talking about doing another one, and Ron Perlman's not going to be a Hellboy. And
yeah, and that's not going to be the same at all. No.
You know,
that'd be hard to recast.
But you know they've got it cast, you know, for somebody else now. So,
right. Yeah, and that's just going to be weird, man. It really is.
Be like the guy from Aquaman not coming back and playing Aquaman, or you know, Robert Downey Jr.
Being Aquaman, right? Right. Because you get used to one, and then they wait so many years that the actor ages or changes or dies or. And then they have to replace them. That'd just be like, you know, Remillion was talking about how Tom Hiddleston, he is Loki. I mean, in real life and everything, he's mischievous. He's so much like Loki in real life, you know, just like he is on the screen. And if they try to, 10 years down the road, try to make another Loki series or do it without Tom, that's going to be bizarre. I mean, it's just not going to be the same. They're never going to cast another Tom Hiddleston.
Joker on that film, that he was always playing jokes on people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
During the whole filming of it and stuff.
He's hilarious.
You know, that's part of, you know, being Loki is you're mischievous. You get to play jokes on people. You get to do things, you know.
And that helps with casting, because a lot of it's natural, you know. It's just like, Ryan Reynolds, he played Daredevil, right? That's casting. Ryan Reynolds is Daredevil. They'll never be able to replace Ryan Reynolds as Daredevil, period. No one else will ever fill those shoes. Never. Pretty much the run of it when he's in that suit, a good chunk of his lines are all his lines.
He makes them up on the fly.
Deadpool. That's what I'm trying to say.
Deadpool. Yeah. So I was thinking
Deadpool.
For you.
Because
Deadpool,
Ryan
right.
is a
Deadpool
Joker.
Is a terrible movie.
Deadpool. He's a jokester in real life, you know, and so is Deadpool. Deadpool's raunchy, jokes all the time, you know, plays tricks. So does Ryan in real life. So, I mean, it was just a match made in heaven.
Well, sometimes the casting in the original show,
you know, Get Smart, and then they did the movie Get Smart, I was like, okay, you know, But the guy that they got to do the movie Get Smart was so good at it that you almost thought that you were watching the original TV show and stuff.
Right.
No, it's important.
Right.
I was going to say, you know, sometimes the way casting is done sets the bar so high, though, that that, you know, that when they attempt to reboot it, you know, it'll fail miserably in the shadow of the original casting. And I'll use one clear example. That was the Nightmares on Elm Street, you know, the original Freddy Krueger played by, you know, Robert Englund. And then they, years later, you know, tried to reboot the franchise with another actor. And just the name slips me who they got to play in that one. But it was so vastly, you know, different and just paled in comparison that, you know, the movie flopped. And, you know, that will happen, you know, when you have, you know, someone that's, you know, sets an iconic character in motion from the get-go. You know, you can't, it's almost makes an impossibility to recast unless you just get lucky and find somebody that's equally as strong.
Well, with that one, I don't think that they even offered it back to Robert, even though he
was not. No, I don't think they did. But I tell you, that's why they flopped, because didn't have his nuance. Mm-mm. So, I mean, yeah, I can tell you why that one flopped, yeah.
You know, but, you know, you would have thought because of his age and everything that they would have offered it back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
He's obviously a character that they have under lots of makeup, so they could have used him even if he was a little older. You know, he could have played it because, I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, he's a, you know, they got plenty of prosthetic makeup. So, yeah, his age wouldn't make a difference at all in that character. So, yeah, if that's true, then that's a bad decision. But it's yeah, sometimes a character does so, or actor does so well with a part that, you know, it sets the bar to very high, and that makes it hard. Because like let me bring up another one, Spartacus, great TV series, I loved it, you know, Andy Whitaker, the original cast person for Spartacus, did such an amazing job with the role, and then he unfortunately got diagnosed with cancer, and then they had to use another actor to finish out the series, and that's a tough thing, you know, because he had set the bar again so high, and that's pretty tough, you know, when you know you've got somebody that's right from the, you know, has that iconic performance, and then when you have to try to, you know, replace that later.
Yeah.
And I do want to get the actor that played him later, because that Liam McIntyre was the one that came in to finish out the series, I believe. He was the one that came in after Andy passed away. But, yeah, and I give him all the credit, because, boy, that's a hard situation to come into.
Well, it was like me and a friend of mine trying to figure out who we were going to use for the tall man. When they did the casting, who we thought, you know, in between the two of us, who we thought they could use for that. And never did come up with an actual person. You know who I'm talking, the tall man from Phantasm, where they're making another Phantasm movie.
Another one.
The guy that played that was, you know, his age is up there.
Right. Again,
yeah, so
they're going to have to recast. Fun. Yeah, and that's hard. That's hard shoes to fill.
And, you know, who are they going to get for that? Because that's a particular character. You've got to find the right person for that. And I don't know who they'll, you know, wind up getting.
Yeah.
But,
oh,
but
no.
going back to Anne, which is how we started the show, she, you know, she will always be remembered as the person, you know, in my opinion, the person that brought vampire stories back to life. You know,
yeah.
where we
gave them new life,
gave them the new life and everything, to where more than just herself could have a living on that type of storyline.
And then touched a whole genre of people through the decades, mind you. Interview of the Vampire, was, I want to say it was released in 1976, which I would have been 2 years old. So literally all my life, you know, and I've always been, you know, in the vampiric world all my life. Even as a child, I was watching the old Dracula films and Nosferatu and, you know, all that. So I've always been immersed in that world. But then she had a whole plethora of people, those of us that love the gothic, you know, the vampires that have a bad side, but that we think we can help, you know, and romancing that and giving that Victorian style to the vampire. And yeah, it hit a whole millions of people. She literally saw millions in that the Chronicles. So
well,
yeah,
she hit
a whole new genre of people.
That just struck my mind, Holly, that she was probably a very large influence on the goth society that we see, you know, even today.
Oh,
yeah,
without a
doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Her stories and everything helped come a lifestyle for a lot of people. They were looking for a place for themselves because they didn't fit in anywhere else.
And those of us with our little black hearts, she made very happy. And we'll go on making me very happy. Oh, yeah, Remillion said that 98, yeah, she came out with Pandora. Yeah, and then Armand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pandora, yeah, that's my girl. I'd love to see a series or a movie made about Pandora. That would just tickle me to death. She had a fascinating story, mm-hmm. too. She's very old.
Yeah.
But that's the importance of secondary characters. And as Steven mm-hmm. has secondary characters, he's got his Storm, Ragnar Stormbreaker, Bringer series.
Mm-hmm. Franchise.
You know, that you wrote. Yeah, you've got that whole franchise that you wrote alongside of Raiden, comes from the Heart of the Lion and all that. And yeah, I mean.
Yeah, they can grow.
You can have these secondary characters that take a life of their own, you know.
Yep.
And
has so much to do with the story, brings so much.
Mm-hmm.
That started
yep.
as one book that became
exactly.
a movie and then
mm-hmm.
became a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, so don't
absolutely
don't ever take your secondary characters for granted, people.
No.
If they
you
want
listen to Carol. Gloria Wheeler.
More in a, yes, if they want to come out more into the spotlight, give them a novella. Give them a break-off story. You know, listen to them. Don't pass them, you know, by the wayside just because they aren't your main character. They can still have a big part, be a big part, and influence
right.
Your storyline as it goes forward.
Well said, Holly,
mm-hmm.
and that is a good spot to conclude. We've got about 30-some seconds left, so I want to thank everyone, Hermillion and Carol and Clayton, and everybody that's been listening. Clayton has thrown down the gauntlet to Holly to read Cursed Hearts, but do note Clayton does have a new one out, Obligations of Rank, new Machine Civilization book. Carol has a book imminent, Witch Hunt, new Nathan Perry novel, and Hermillion has a stuff coming out like every day almost. She's very prolific, but thank you for listening, everyone. See you next week, 9 o'clock Eastern. On the Star Chamber Show, Holly, Daniel, take us out.
Night. See you next week for another great chat. All right, Daniel.
And this week we kept it on the rails mainly. We helped it stay where it needed to be. on education and good, you know, through a little bit of rambling and stuff in there about different people and different characters and how to actually flush out some of your characters to where they can actually, you know, be another whole story for you. I know that I'm going to use, you know, some of the information tonight in my writing, and I hope you do too. Until we talk again next week, this is Daniel Dark signing off.